Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris with Mark Grody bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Number 1.
How did Week 1 affect your opinion of the quarterbacks in the NFC North?
Well, I think if you listen to what we had to say in the last couple of hours, you realize that we got weirdly lucky or unlucky, if you look at it in two different ways, that we got two games focusing on the division against itself in week one. Remember how long the Bears had to wait to play a divisional opponent last year? They played all of their non-divisional and then played all of their divisional. So this is the opposite of that. We got to see a lot in week one. Unfortunately, that means it counts more, and we're trying to assess that as well and the expectation therein. So in the first game that we got to see, it was the afternoon island game of Packers and Lions, where you got to see, unfortunately, Green Bay score a paltry amount of points in 13 compared, or Detroit rather, score a paltry amount of points in 13 compared to what they typically do. And Green Bay's defense go from already really good to absolutely great. So how did that affect my opinion of the quarterbacks in that game? I think that Jared Goff and company is still trying to figure out life after Ben Johnson. I think that we've shown that Micah Parsons is going to be able to make that incredibly hard for whoever he's in front of. No matter what your life is going to tell you about that day. Does that mean to me that he's now lower? I think he's still probably the top-rated quarterback just because of the resume he has and the accomplishment that he has. I don't think that that is how this Detroit team is going to look moving forward. I think that that was most likely an aberration as they try to adjust. How long it takes to adjust, we'll find out on Sunday. So he's still my number one. Then you've got to figure out number two. It's not Jordan Love for me, and it's not J.J. McCarthy, and I can't say it's Caleb Williams. So I don't know what to do with the rest of them. I just know that Jared Goff is still probably the best quarterback in the division. Could it end differently? That would mean that Caleb Williams most likely has taken a massive step, or scarily, that J.J. McCarthy has. I think Jordan Love, you kind of know what you're getting with that guy.
So the reason I pose this question, and this is my question, how did week one affect your opinion of the quarterbacks in the NFC North, is I wanted people to take a step back and remember what they thought before the season started about these quarterbacks. And I had it very simply as it was Jared Goff, and then it was Jordan Love and Caleb Williams on the same tier, and then it was a question mark, a big question mark next to J.J. McCarthy. Understanding who J.J. McCarthy's play caller is. Understanding that J.J. McCarthy had a week to observe as Sam Darnold did what he did under Kevin O'Connell. And now after a week, I can say confidently that it is Jared Goff on tier one. And then that second tier, that question mark doesn't exist. He's up there with them now, J.J. McCarthy and Caleb Williams and Jordan Love. They're, because it's not just about what can you do. It's like, what have you done? And in 1 week, he's done enough to make me say, with Kevin O'Connell, knowing his track record as a play caller and a quarterback guru, that he's going to be at minimum on the level we've seen Caleb Williams from last year and then Jordan Love as well. So now it's just more of a race to see who can, if anyone, catch up with Jared Goff, or if Jared Goff will fall down to where those other quarterbacks are without Ben Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, Goff was 31 of 39, 225 yards, a touchdown and an interception, but he was also sacked 4 times. We saw the one from Micah Parsons being incredible. Jordan Love was only 16 of 22. He threw for 2 touchdown passes, though. He had 188 yards. So you can tell even by that, knowing what you know about what you saw about the game, what the talent level is and what the objectives are there. The better question is, do Caleb and J.J. McCarthy make leaps and bounds improvements? And that's what you're trying to figure out by week 17. But It did let you know about a little bit more about what you're trying to see out of everybody, just by a little.
Also, the quarterbacks who did the least, as far as pass attempts, they were the winners. So that could be a lesson for everyone to take in.
Number two.
Packers, Commanders, Thursday Night Football coverage begins at 6:30 with kickoff at 7:15 right here on The Score in the Odyssey app. Layla Marshall, who you got?
Okay. I thought about this hard, and although I want to say it's Micah, it's the Packers, I really think Jaden Daniels is going to do special stuff tonight.
Oof.
I think he's going to have the special sauce. You just heard Charch in a previous segment, Paul Charchian, our fantasy guru, talk about the fact that that running game from Ja'Cory Croskett Merritt, another seventh round pick at running back, has been phenomenal. His PFF grade, go check that out. 10 carries for 82 yards in his NFL debut. I think the Commanders are going to find a way to get it done. You know why? Because just the question we just answered, I didn't say that Jordan Love was up there. I just said he's on the same tier with Caleb Williams. I don't think Jordan Love has the ability to bring them back if Jaden Daniels plays how I think Jaden Daniels can play.
The problem is they play the Giants. Yeah, the Commanders. Okay. And you're just not going to get a lot of information out of that. You expect them to win. It would have said a lot more if they had lost. You know, that 21-6, that final against the Giants, understandable. Like, you know what you were getting there. You knew how you needed to beat that Giants team. They weren't going to make any statements, most likely, unless they won. And then that's a whole different discussion. If the Giants had beaten the Commanders, I think they'd start 0-2, because that would let you know how they'd fare against Green Bay. Home field might be the difference in this one. Green Bay might start 2-0.
No, that's a possibility. Let me ask you this. Are the Giants the Dolphins of the NFC, or is that the Saints?
Ooh.
That's a really
good question, because how it was constructed, and then B, how it makes you think.
But like, also,
I think the Saints are in a better spot.
Only one team did not score a touchdown in week one. It was the New York Giants. Think about that.
Yeah, the other piece of this is, too, is when you consider the Saints, for example, it comes down to your confidence in Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis still being the guy there. And then he's one offensive mind, but how you've seen Miami struggle, I just can't say, based on the talent level that the Dolphins have, that thing is so far off the rails yet. I'm going to reserve my off-the-rails judgment another week before I think that everything is broken. Just because you had an upsetting training camp doesn't mean that your whole season has to fall apart. I'm here to tell you, you can make adjustments along the way.
Number three.
Third question here in Five on It with Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, and Mark Grote. Mark Grody, where's he? Oh, he's at Hallis Hall. Mark Grody's at Hallis Hall. It was Andrew Kittredge, not Brad Keller, who got the save for the Cubs last night. Would you trust Kittredge as the Cubs closer for the rest of the year if Palencia is out?
Give me that sound effect again. Is that the official Andrew Kittredge? Oh, because he's a kitty cat.
Did you see the Titans schedule video where they interviewed all the people on Broadway who didn't know the logos? Do you remember the girl who said "rar" for the Falcons? She was like, the Red Stallions, rar.
Closer, Andrew Kittredge.
Rar. I do think that when they traded for Andrew Kittredge, didn't they have plans for him? Like, don't you feel like that was the case? Like, he was supposed to be used in high leverage innings, and then he had that bad outing, and I think that kind of prevented the Cubs from doing so. Which, by the way, Chris Sale looked unstoppable in that game until unfortunately he gave up a couple runs, and then they took him out after what I thought was kind of a short outing for him, but I get it because he's not a spring chicken. He came out after five, gave up seven hits total, but it was that whole 8 strikeouts in a row thing that was pretty dominating. I don't think they were all in a row, but it felt that way.
No, Nico Horner was like, let me get my lick.
Nico Horner batting leadoff was effective. All of that to say, regarding the bullpen shuffle that we are seeing, do you think it might even just come down to handedness and who's up in the order next with the way they're going to have to use this ninth inning person?
I expect that completely to be how Craig Counsell approaches this. If you see that Brad Keller was used in the eighth inning, you're thinking, oh, Kittredge must be further back in the bullpen. But that's not what it was at all. What it was the high leverage threat, the bigger threat, was the top of the order, which is what Kittredge, a left-hander, faced. When you go Jerickson Profar, followed by Matt Olson,
yeah,
Yeah, that tells you those are the two guys you need to get to worry about as far as having a one-run lead and holding on for the last two innings.
And I guess it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing that Brad Keller and Andrew Kittredge are your high-leverage people who are still producing for you in that pen. But I don't necessarily know if we've seen a defined role yet.
Brad Keller will face the most high-leverage of high-leverage situations going forward. He has not still given up a run since the All-Star break.
And I feel like that may be the playoff preview. If there is any playoff preview to take out of what's happening right now, the use of Keller might be a good indication of how that would go down.
The other playoff preview, which is why I believe the Cubs can be a real problem in the playoffs, is did they just face an electric Cy Young award-winning left-handed starting pitcher and find a way to win the game by scoring runs off of them and hanging an L on him? I believe they did.
That is a W. And they took the series, which was also something we needed to see. His two-seamer to me is still so effective.
Everything that man does is effective.
It's just the arm length. His arm looks like it's 7 miles long.
Also, shout out to Carson Kelly for, you know, doing damage.
Yeah, Carson Kelly having a little bit of a
resurgence.
He's on it now. Maybe that was just a slump for him after the All-Star break.
Number four.
How confident are you that the Cubs will, at minimum, host a wild card series?
Confident. I am 95% confident.
Only 95%?
Yeah, statistically speaking, that is very high.
83.
That is not as high. That is actually pretty significantly lower. It's almost as if it were exponential. Depending on how you look at a bell curve, this is not why you called. I'm confident because of what we just saw yesterday, for example, bend don't break. You did drop the series to the Nats. You at least answered with a sufficient series against the Braves, doing what you needed to do to them, at least taking two or three. Now you're playing an emotionally charged series, for example, against the Rays coming up Saturday. You're now honoring Anthony Rizzo. I think that will matter for this Cubs team because of guys like Ian Happ, you know, who still know him well. So all of that said, especially since the Dodgers are in the NL West, the Padres are in the NL West, for example, you consider that when you put this all together. So for me, I think that the Cubs will indeed host. And also, maybe it comes down to that Padres and Brewers series at the last week of the month here. 22nd, 23rd, 24th, they are at home against the Brewers. Could that help decide things for them? And thusly, Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee still wins the division, Marshall. I'm sorry. But I still think it's probably more so the Cubs hosting.
Just want to remind people, the Cubs are only 5 games back in the loss column, the only column that matters. The question becomes, can they make that up in 2.5 weeks? I believe they can. The Brewers not looking great lately. Freddy Peralta got lit up last night. Just want to point that out to people. He is human.
Padres schedule, by the way, they play 4 games against the Rockies coming up. Lucky them. Then they play 3 against the Mets, 3 at the White Sox, then 3 at home against the Brewers, and they close out the season with a series against the Diamondbacks.
I am supremely confident that the Cubs will, at minimum, host a wild card series, but I still have them in to catch the Brewers and tie them up for the division. I also want to say this. They got who do they have this week in the Cubs?
The Rays.
Who's tenderizing them right now, getting them set up for that series?
Tenderize.
You know, do you not like your chicken parm to be a very flat piece of chicken?
Yeah, no, but the tenderizing of a baseball team.
Listen,
that's a chicken parm.
Yes, they are treating them like chicken parm right now so that they are ready for Cubs consumption. That's what the White Sox are doing across town.
Tenderizing.
Number 5.
Last question here on 5 on it with Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody, who joins us at 125 from Hallis Hall. Last question. Which fan base hates their ex more, Ben Johnson in Detroit or Craig Counsell in Milwaukee?
Which fan base hates their ex more? My automatic answer was Craig Counsell. For God's sake, people defaced a park sign in Whitefish Bay over that man. They call him a traitor, as we've heard. Our buddy Vinny Rotino talks about Craig leaving and abandoning the Brewers. He gets booed every time he's introduced there now, and he had a robust history with that team. He was a former player. Then he became the manager. Then he left. He left to go to the rival. The hate from the Brewers fans is pretty strong when it comes to how they feel about Craig Counsell no longer being their manager.
Was that T-R-A-D-E-R or T-R-A-I-T-O-R?
I feel like this case, it's a losing battle. The people who are going to call somebody a traitor like that, they usually say like financial trader with a D, like right. Cards.
Okay, my answer is Ben Johnson. To make the argument, I cede my time to Robbie Triano.
Well, if I was a Lions fan, I'm a Bears fan. I was born in a Jewel, conceived in a Portillo's parking lot. If I were to...
During the 85 Super Bowl?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go Bears.
This sounds oddly
makes
familiar,
him old. You're
Danny.
Not 40. You're not 40.
So if I were to pick the side of the Lions and say why, when Matthew Stafford came to play in the Lions' first playoff game last year, 2 years ago, 2024? Yes, that's when it happened. They absolutely rained boos on Matthew Stafford, who is a top three line of all time. You have Barry Sanders, you have Calvin Johnson, you have Matthew Stafford. And for them to absolutely rain on them, it was incredible. And for him to be entering, you know, Ford Field again, where he left us to go to the Bears, it will be one of the loudest moments in Ford Field history, what will happen this week.
Okay, I have several questions. Top three Lion of all time above...
There's not many.
Chris Spielman? I'm just going to start throwing names at you. You just tell me.
Yes.
Herman Moore?
Yes. Like,
Joe Schmidt?
If we talk about quarterbacks, like, there's no doubt he's the best quarterback in our franchise.
Okay, if you had said that, I wouldn't be asking these questions, but you just said top three Lion of all time.
He is a top three. He is number three.
Okay. All right. That's the way you feel.
I hate Ben Johnson.
Doak Walker?
I mean, if I was a Lions fan, I hate Ben Johnson.
Didn't they name an award after him?
They did indeed.
Interesting.
I get it. I mean, yeah, when you name those three, that's a pretty significant list. I'm not saying that. They do have a lot of history, you know. We have to hear about Sid Luckman all the time, just saying.
Johnny Morris.
In the career?
Oh, poor Rome.
Rome didn't know how hard it was going to be. He's found out, hasn't he?
He sounded so hopefully confused.
In a career?
He's like, I can hit those numbers. Sure about that?
You sure about that?
Okay.
All right, now that I ponder and look away into the abyss... Actually, it's a beautiful day here in the city. I'm looking forward to getting outside.
Back to the
work.
80s today. We got a little stretch.
Yeah, I'm loving this. This is fantastic. I'm loving it. I mean, maybe I get a snack wrap since I said I'm loving it.
I was going to let that hang for you.
Next up on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score, our friend Clay Harbor is joining us in studio, the former NFL veteran, of course, of the Pro Football Show, Big Pro Football Show on CHSN. He will be in studio with us next for two segments. We'll go over what he thought, especially of the tight end game, for example, from the Bears, and more. That's next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk, mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Next.
Clay Harbor, former NFL player.
Clay Harbor, slot to the left. Here's Vic's pass, and it's caught. Touchdown by Harbor.
And that's a touchdown. Clay Harbor makes that catch,
and they've got Harbor for the touchdown. 18-yard touchdown pass by Chad Henning.
Football analyst for Chicago Sports Network.
The overthrows. Huge problem. In last year and the first game of this year combined, Caleb leads all quarterbacks on overthrown incompletions by 5 throws. The worst in the NFL, so that's something he has to clean up.
Clay Harbor with Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
You hear dreams and nightmares. That's because he is a former Philadelphia Eagle as well. You know him from the Big Pro Football Show alongside our own David Haw. We love to see it. The 9-year NFL veteran Clay Harbor at Clay Harbs on X. He is in studio at Clay Harbs 82. That's the X designation. And I think that's a good place, actually. The highlight that Robbie Triano just played. Tight end play was a big part of this one, and it's great to have a former tight end in the office today. Hey, Clay.
Hey, and I heard that intro, and my stats were off a little bit. It was actually a little worse than what I thought. Just to make sure that we're being completely factual here, Caleb Williams leads the NFL in 52 incompletions due to overthrows. That's 17 more than the next highest quarterback. He added five more on Monday night. So not five more than the next quarterback. 17 since the start of last year. So overthrows, just to jump right into it, overthrows is something that Caleb has to get better at, because overthrows, you don't give your receiver a chance to even draw a penalty, catch a football. So that's definitely something he has to improve on.
I want to know specifically the DJ Moore overthrow, where he obviously broke off his route because he was like, I see space. I'm running to the end zone.
Yeah.
Do you put that more on the connection between the two players and something that can improve? Or is this just more of what we saw from last year with their seeming lack of chemistry?
It's something you practice if you're running a route. Say, to me, that looked like a deep out that DJ just saw that there was a blown coverage and he can go for the end zone. Like, you go back to the old Randy Moss days. He wasn't running a million go balls. If he thought he could beat someone deep, Culpepper knew he's going to throw up his arm. We call it the mailbox, and that meant throw the ball to the end zone. And Randy Moss caught the touchdown most of the time. So DJ says, hey, there ain't nobody guarding the end zone. I can win that. Throw up the arm. Caleb felt like he saw it, but he just didn't get it there.
The hesitation, right?
The hesitation. He just wasn't really sure what DJ was going to do. But yeah, that's something you practice, and that's something that has to be completed. I mean, you have situations like that that come up in training camp, that come up in mini camps, that come up in preseason, and you practice them there. Even in the practice, when you're leading up to the season, coaches sometimes will throw in those coverages, so you're seeing that, and you have that happen spontaneously. You don't know it's coming, so you will hit those. So yeah, that's definitely something you got to hit.
Well, and to me, I think Troy Aikman said on that play specifically, he said he thought Caleb was reading the flat. So in reading the flat, he missed DJ Moore being open there. But that is like college ball 101. I can't tell you how many times I've seen a play where some college receiver especially has outrun the entire field and is like, hey, I'm open, and just raises his hand and you throw it to him. So that's something that I feel like would be very familiar to any accomplished college quarterback, which he absolutely is, Caleb Williams. And yeah, that's what we saw. DJ thought he was open. He thought he had something. I think that happens more often than we even realize in the NFL.
Well, see, that's what I was going to ask Clay, is specifically college is one thing. NFL, better players, better coaching, better scheming. In theory, it's like a hanging curveball against a great pitcher, right? You can't miss when that opportunity presents itself.
No, absolutely. Specific play, you're reading the flat defender. If he hangs a little bit, and there's a couple times where Caleb, I thought, made the wrong decision there. I wish we could show tape, just like the All-22, and just like explain it, because it's a lot easier that way. Obviously, we can't run radio here, but where the flat defender, if he hangs and you got a guy, Ben Johnson loves this concept where you run a flat route and you run like a 15-yard out, right? And there's one flat defender there to guard him. If the flat defender hangs, you bang the 15-yard out. If he takes away the 15-yard out, then you bang the flat. And Caleb was just not decisive on either one of those when they did that. And early in the game, you know, he led the NFL in checkdowns this week, which was, I guess, good.
Because he completed passes.
He completed passes. Obviously, 10 for 10 coming out the gate. But there was obviously some things there that he missed down the field. And those are concerning, because it's like, why are you hesitating here? You just got to let it rip. And as players and receivers, they start to get a little bit, they lose a little confidence. They're maybe not running the routes the same way. I'm not even going to get this ball anyways. Lose a little confidence if this keeps happening.
Well, I think also, too, we saw this during the game. There were times where, especially with Rome Odunze, Rome, I think, is a really good route runner. That probably should be said more by us, because I feel like it is one of his strengths. And in doing so, there are times where he has to, I think, pause a little bit more than he normally would, because he's hit his spot so effectively. And then he's got to wait for the ball. And I feel like we saw that a bit, too, in the game on Monday night.
Yeah, there's definitely times where the ball's late getting there. And obviously, there's the accuracy issues. I mean, the off-target throws, 29% last week is, you know, the tops in the league. You got to be better than that, especially when you start 10 for 10. You end up leading the NFL in off-target throws at 29% of your throws. Something you got to improve on. And
as far as Rome goes, I think that Rome, yes, there was a couple plays that we missed him there, but he had a chance to make the play on the sidelines, if you guys remember that. If you're a top 10 draft pick, you know, I don't expect Clay Harbor to make that play. I expect Roma Dunze to make that play. That guy, you're a top 10 draft pick in that top 10 money. You come down with that ball. That was a good play by Caleb. So not all of it was on Caleb. I thought the protection wasn't good. The one thing people aren't giving Caleb credit for is the escapability that he had on some of these plays. A lot of these plays, this Bears offensive line that we're thinking we got a good offensive line, if you're a normal quarterback, there would have been probably about 6 sacks, yes, on Monday. Caleb escaped some really bad interior offensive line play. Jonah Jackson, we gave this guy an extension before we saw him play. Drew Dahlman, the number one center in free agency. Those two guys, when I turned on the All-22, I said, is this Coleman Shelton? I said, is this Ryan Bates?
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Ryan Bates.
It's one game, and I think they will get better. They're learning how to play next to each other. But that first game, what I saw, I said, Coleman Shelton snuck a Bears jersey, and he's playing as Drew Dahlman. I said, Ryan Bates somehow got back in the league, and he's white now, and he's playing like he's, you know. Well, Jonah Jackson is white. I'm sorry.
I get what you're saying.
It just didn't look good.
How much of this, though, is predicated on the fact that they really didn't establish a running game? And how concerning is that? Even though we heard after the game Ben Johnson say, that's on me, I'll do better with runs.
They were part of the reason they didn't establish a run game. I'm looking at Dahlman and Jackson for that, too. I mean, I thought Darnell Wright played a solid game. I thought Braxton Jones, I mean, you're not expecting him to be some stone-cold killer. He held his own. You know, Joe Tooney, ups and downs, but majority of ups. The two guys that you couldn't really, and I posted something on X, you know, a little basically showing some of these plays. These guys are getting beat on runs and passes. To establish a run game, you got to be able to run the football between these offensive linemen, and they're doing a lot of wide zone stuff. I thought there'd be more gap scheme in here. I think next week you'll see a little more gap scheme and maybe get Menungai in there for the gap scheme. But it was all Swift. It was all wide zone because that's what Swift does. I think in the second half, Swift came out and he had a good drive where he's lowering his pads. He was falling forward. He was doing everything he wanted to do. You saw it there for a little bit. But I think you got to mix up a little more schemes. And you're giving all your reps to Swift. This Ben Johnson is a guy his entire career. Let's go back to Swift's first go-around. It was Swift and Jamal Adams. You know, Jamal Williams, excuse me, that had the rushes. Two different styles the defense had to prepare for. If the wide zone isn't working, guess what the gap scheme is? You go back to, obviously, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. The wide zone isn't working, guess what the gap scheme is? You got two guys. Why not give Menungai a try if he's your seventh-round pick? You trust so much. If you don't trust him, why don't you bring somebody else in? So those are the questions that I'm asking. You have one guy that runs a specific type of a ball. He's good at the zone scheme. Why not give Menungai a shot to run some of this gap scheme stuff? Or if you don't believe in him, you saw Howie Roseman, Ryan Poles' old boss, maybe made the moves that Ryan Poles should have made. He traded for Za'Darius. He signed Za'Darius Smith. He traded for Tank Bigsby from the Jaguars. Tank Bigsby is a great gap scheme runner. Za'Darius Smith is a guy that had 9 sacks last year.
Well, Roshan Johnson has to be the answer, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm hopeful.
If he's healthy.
I'm hopeful he's going to be healthy soon because they could have put him on the short-term IR. They never did. Mm-hmm. You know, so Roshan, they said he didn't practice today, right? Wasn't that what the, if it was a walkthrough, but if they would have practiced.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah. It was an injury
DNP.
Report. Yeah.
So that's concerning. If you're missing the Tuesday, Wednesday practice.
He was like,
Roshan
limited
was
yesterday.
Limited practice.
He was limited.
So
okay.
That's an upgrade from what we saw last week.
So maybe Roshan's ready. Maybe he needs one more week. But you definitely need a different style in there. If it's not Menungai who's healthy, maybe Britton Brown on the practice squad, you call him up and you give him an opportunity to do some of these gap scheme runs. Because you got to find a way to run the ball, especially in this offense when Ben Johnson was a top 5 rusher of the football last year. People think of him as this, you know, what they call him, a snot-nosed computer geek, you know, pass the ball all the time. Like, no, this guy is a good runner of the football. He always has been.
That's the voice of Clay Harbor, the NFL veteran of 9 years, former tight end as well, works for the Big Pro Football Show over on CHSN with David Haw. And I think you brought up a good point, too, about what we saw in the offensive line. I was watching it, and I thought to myself, especially when you're seeing both Drew Dahlman and Jonah Jackson way up here on some of those blocks, I'm like, is that me? Am I the one who's not seeing this correctly? And then in the second half, Brian Flores took advantage of that. He wasn't even trying to hide that he was bringing up an extra rusher to shoot that gap. And that's what happened in the second half. You saw it be effective. I understand, at least in this offense, that's QB's job to slide the protection there. But that was definitely something that they took advantage of, that weakness, that hinge in the joint, you know, where they knew they could get a gap and have some pressure. And I think it was effective.
They caused a lot of confusion, too. Like, a couple of these plays, I'm trying to figure out, like, whose man was that? They just turned, like, the Bears are running some type of, like, gap protection, like almost like a zone scheme where nobody's really accounting for a man, the slide protection, and they just let a runner run through right through the middle. And Caleb did a good job of escaping some of that. Like, those are plays that he got out of and ended up rushing for, you know, 10 to 12 yards. But Brian Flores had an excellent scheme. He started out not blitzing. He blitzed one time in the first quarter. The rest of the game, 14 blitzes. He went from blitzing 25% of the time in the first half to 45% of the time in the second half. He had Ben Johnson. He outcoached Ben Johnson. I'm sorry. That game, he outcoached Ben Johnson. He came out. He did something different. It's like that boxer that's going to hold back a little bit in the first round, and then you see
feeling
him come out. Yeah, yeah, feeling out. The next thing you know, he come out in the second, third, fourth round. He's swinging away. That's what Brian Flores was able to do when he caught, I think he caught Ben Johnson off guard, and he wasn't really prepared for Brian Flores to come out in such a passive defense and kind of put it on his front four and then to pick it up with all the blitzes and really get Caleb flustered.
How much do you think that was, though, Ben Johnson being in his first game as a head coach with way more responsibility than he ever had in the four previous matchups when he's an offensive coordinator and he's scoring 30-plus points every time?
Oh, yeah. I think Ben Johnson... I wholeheartedly believe in Ben Johnson. I think Ben Johnson is going to be the guy to turn this thing around. I'm sorry, I don't know exactly. You know, I'm hopeful for Caleb. I am very hopeful and confident in Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson didn't have a good game coaching, though.
Wait, you're not as confident in Caleb?
I'm not as confident in Caleb as I am in Ben Johnson.
We're on the same page. We're on the
No, are you kidding me, Mr. Tyson Bagent? A clock.
See, we're not going to take it out of context, though. What I said is, I believe there is a ticking countdown on Caleb Williams as a quarterback figuring it out. Because Ben Johnson told me he's got to meet me where I am. He's got to catch up with what we're trying to do as a team. And Caleb Williams clearly isn't there yet. But, grace, patience, all of that going forward. But I said, I think at some point this season, if he doesn't improve in very basic ways, then Ben Johnson's going to say, okay, you clearly can't get the job done. I got to see what else is over here.
We have seen Ben Johnson do it before at a high level. In his 3 years in Detroit, he was top five all 3 years in points per game. He was top four all years in yards per game. We've seen this guy do it at a high level. We know he can. Now he's got some different equipment. It's like Picasso, great painter. Guy couldn't draw. You know, can we give Picasso a paintbrush, or are we going to give him some crayons? You know, he needs a specific type of player to be successful, because we have seen him be successful before. And I know you guys have talked about this ad nauseum. Ben Johnson did some things he shouldn't have done. He should have kicked that field goal on 4th and 3. I'm sorry, you're not playing with the Detroit Lions last year. You're playing with a quarterback first year in your system. You're playing in some bad turf. You're playing in a windy Chicago. We'd have AI coaches if none of this mattered. Sometimes the analytics aren't the analytics. Just kick the football and get the points.
I agree with that. That is the voice of Clay Harbor. He is in studio with us for yet another segment.
Can't wait.
We can't. It's always fun when Clay is here in studio on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on the Score. Mark will join us from Hallis Hall at 1:25. More with Clay next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The Raheem and Harris Show with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We are back here on Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score with our friend Clay Harbor, a big pro football show on CHSN with David Haw, and also on I'd say what? How many social medias are you on? You got your Instagram, you got Twitter. Like, you provide content for people on your platforms.
I'm also on TikTok, but...
You're on TikTok now?
I know you guys are a little bit old for TikTok.
Oh, I'm on TikTok. I have one video.
Don't play me.
I need to post more.
I've got several videos on TikTok. Also, to the text line, this is from 708. Picasso could absolutely draw. Recent AIC show displayed that talent. I expect more art historical accuracy from my local sportscasters. This isn't Milwaukee. And 630, the 64-pack of crayons with a sharpener slaps.
The two of those together.
Yes.
Like, sometimes we get the best comedy unintentionally just because of the text line being like, this sucks. And then this other person's like, this is great.
I studied ancient history my first 2 years of college, of undergrad. And I love history. It's still a passion of mine. But I did end up with a hospitality and restaurant degree with a minor in marketing. So I'm sorry about the Picasso thing. Maybe I was off there, guys.
And the fact that it says recent AIC show displayed that talent.
When are we having Clay open his own restaurant? Now that I know that information.
And I missed the Art Institute Picasso show, and I was kind of bummed about that, but I'll get back there.
Yeah,
you did?
Yeah.
I missed that exhibit. I was bummed about it.
It was pretty overrated. It was like, you're talking about the one where they would like put the things up on the wall and you like walk through it virtually?
I don't know. Was that at the Art Institute?
It was at the Art Institute, and then there was another...
Oh, the immersive or whatever?
The immersive, yeah, the immersive.
I did the immersive on Van Gogh, I think, but that was...
Oh, maybe that's... Yeah, I'm actually thinking of Van Gogh.
You guys are so cultured. This is not...
Yeah, we are trying to talk about football.
See, he's trying to dispel the dumb jock stereotype one segment at a time.
I mean, I'm sorry, 708. I didn't get to go to the Art Institute for that one. So I think we're still doing okay. If you want to argue about post-impressionism, I'm sure there is a place for you. In the meantime, I'm still trying to get a post-impression of the game from Monday.
Ooh, I like that transition.
But seriously, because we were talking about this in the break, and I wanted to bring it up to you. What did you think of just how Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams and the Bears sounded after game one? I feel like that was a different tone than from what I had heard in the head coach prior to that.
Yeah, he sounded pretty dejected to me. It's not the usual guy that got that confidence. It's like, hey, we've done this. We're going to get better. We're going to improve. Sounds like a guy that's a little bit unsure of himself, and we haven't really heard that from Ben Johnson yet. Yes, he's taking accountability, and I love that. After all of the dodging, guy looked like Neo from The Matrix. Matt Eberflus dodging all the accountability, like the Hail Mary, everything. Like, this guy's standing there, and he's taking the shots. He's taking the bullets. He goes, yes, I should have kicked the ball out of bounds. I thought Cairo could kick it out the end zone. You know where you get the ball, Marshall, when you kick it out of bounds?
40-yard line.
You know where you get it when you kick it out of the end zone?
35-yard line.
Exactly. Give me the points. Kick the ball out of bounds. The challenge. The guy is down. When you hit the ball, it's a part of the body. I didn't know that. You're the head coach. You should have known that. And then kick the field goal. I don't care what the analytics say. We're not AI coaches. No. Kick the field goal. This isn't Detroit. You don't have that system. You don't have that much time in that system. I'm all for being aggressive as a player. Coach says go for it. I say heck yeah, and in a different word, in a different way. But that's what I say. I love the aggressive nature of that.
Blank,
but you need those points right here. Another thing I wanted to talk about with you guys is the 12 penalties for 127 yards. You're not going to win many games. The first meeting I go to New England, I sit down in the team meeting room. I'm waiting for what are the first words. Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Not anymore. Don't talk about Boston College Bill with Jordan Hudson. I'm talking about old school Bill, the
ACC
Patriot
Bill.
Way back when I played for the Patriots.
PJ, pre-Jordan.
First words. He goes, before you can learn how to win, you have to figure out how not to lose. How do you not lose? You don't have 12 penalties for 127 yards. What's up with your cadence? Yeah, Ben Johnson's talking about, okay, we're going to a silent cadence that might be easier. Never happen, ever. You're going into the Detroit Lions, into Ford Field. I played on Ford Field when we made the playoffs, the last playoff berth before the Dan Campbell era back in 2016. Yeah, I'm patting myself on the back. We got beat in the first round in the Seahawks in Lumen Field. The Seahawks, couldn't hear yourself think out there. We were doing the silent count. No player ever wants to do a silent count. You do the silent count out of necessity. Ben Johnson was saying, how can you fix this cadence to not get false starts? Maybe it's a silent count. I think that was tongue in cheek. But silent count makes things so much more difficult. It's going off of the head movement of the center. You have to wait for the center to nod or move his head. You move it a couple times. There's a double count. There's a first movement. There's a bunch of different stuff you do with silent count. You got a veteran offensive line, so you should be able to do that. But in no way will it be easier pre-snap in Detroit than it is at home. And to me, that's concerning after four false starts.
I also want to ask you this. Since you were talking about the decision to go for points and the strategy therein, it reminded me of what happened with the decision to punt in the Baltimore and Buffalo game. I still to this day can't, like, I was thinking about that yesterday, even though I know we've talked about it. What did you think about the Ravens punting away when they had fourth and three?
When they lined up to punt, I said the game's over. There's a feel for things here. There's a few, you give the ball to Lamar Jackson, the guy that should have been the MVP last year, Ooh. Instead of kicking it to the guy that was the MVP last year. Okay, that's what you do. You give him the option to run or pass, roll him out. To me, it's not that hard. Give it to your best player. Your defense hasn't stopped anything all game long, especially in the last quarter. You're going to punt the ball to Josh Allen? No.
There are three teams, which Layla will share momentarily, where if they are playing any of these three teams against each other, if your defense is on the field at the end of the game, you will lose. What are the three teams, Layla?
Ravens, Chiefs, and Bills.
Yeah. That sound pretty accurate?
That's AFC formula.
That's very accurate. And that's why, you know, it's always so interesting to see how coaches take these decisions. Analytics are great. Analytics worked great in Detroit the last couple of years because the way the team was set up. You had the best offensive line in football. Now, even in Detroit, they can't play the same way because their interior offensive line isn't the same. I mean, you got Tate Ratledge was getting beat like a stepchild against Green Bay. You got Graham Glasgow out there acting like he had never played football before. I mean, this interior offensive line didn't look good. I watched some of that film to get ready for this Bears game. I am not impressed with that interior offensive line of the Detroit Lions.
Dennis Allen does work if he gets Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson back then?
I think they do work regardless. I think Jervon Dexter has a big game. I think Grady Jarrett comes back and has a big game. I know he's on the injury report right now. And Big Billings did not have a great game. I think he bounces back and has a good game. The tackles, obviously, Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker are pros. Those are guys you don't see what you saw happen. Penei Sewell often, he was going against a guy named Micah Parsons. I'm really not looking forward to when he comes to Chicago. But the interior of that Detroit offensive line is the weakest it's been since Dan Campbell's been there.
Ooh, now those are some optimistic words if you're facing the Lions, that's for sure. That's
they had 43 Clay Harbor. Rushing yards. I'm sorry to cut in, but
no.
They had 43 rushing yards on 22 carries, and you could see why. You felt bad for Gibbs and Montgomery. When's the last time you could say that?
So a Bears dub.
I don't know about that.
Fair enough. You can catch Clay with Ruthie Polinsky and David Haw on the Big Pro Football Show. You got a show today, right? 5:30?
Yeah, 5:30 today at the United Center. Make sure you guys tune in. We're going to be talking a lot of Bears. We're going to do a little Lions preview. You got your guys' very own David Haw over there dropping some knowledge. So make sure you tune in.
I know. I said David Haw a lot, but Ruthie's on our shows too. Ruthie getting some love as well.
Absolutely. Ruthie's got some good stuff too.
So that is Clay. Thanks for joining us. You can catch Clay later today. And Marshall's just laughing.
We look forward to having you in a couple of weeks, Clay. And we'll catch up, watch the game maybe out tonight outside of our general area.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Did you just say outside?
Yeah.
Yes.
I am never going to let you forget that. Yeah. More with Raheem and Harris coming up next. We have more pro footballers to talk to. We got to talk to Sean King. He was J.J. McCarthy's offensive coordinator, IMG. Of course, the quarterback who was with the Super Bowl-winning Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Sean King, always a guest that brings a lot of opinion. So we'll do that next on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.